Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Hello, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to another monthly installment of A Course in Miracles with Robert Rosenthal, MD. As strange as it seems, the ego has a profound investment in sickness, as is stated in A Course in Miracles. Why? Because the body exists in a world that seems to contain two voices fighting for its possession. An illusory perception exists where the body is seen as capable of loyalty to one or the other, which then gives meaning to the concepts of health and sickness. Suggested reading for this segment is Chapter 8, Section 8, The Body as Means or End, Chapter 10, The Idols of Sickness, Lesson 76, as well as Lessons 135 through 140. Sickness is mentioned in numerous chapters, but we'll try to keep our dialogue based on these sections mentioned. And I'd like to start out reading just a couple of lines from Chapter 8, The Journey Back, Section 8, which states, "Sickness is a way of demonstrating that you can be hurt. It is a witness to your frailty, your vulnerability, and your extreme need to depend on external guidance. The ego uses this as its best argument for your need for its guidance. It dictates endless prescriptions for avoiding catastrophic outcomes." And it goes on to explain everything in much deeper detail. But first, Dr. Bob, welcome back. It's great to be together again.
Thank you. Yes, it is, Char. And looking forward to getting into this topic.
Yeah, well, like we said, it's very timely, given that it is wintertime and beyond flu season. Many people are suffering from maladies that have their body locked down and forced to get continual medical treatment. So maybe we can help them out by helping them change their minds a little.
Yeah, we'll sow a seed of healing out there in the the ether for everyone. Here in the Northeast, there truly has been an epidemic of bronchitis. I've had 1, 2, 3 family members with it, and when one of them went to see his physician, the physician told him that, and this was just 3 days ago, that he had 90 unscheduled people who needed to come in all for this exact same coughing thing that has been going around.
Yeah.
Now, hearing that, you know, a lot of people would immediately go into fear, and this is why this is such an important topic. It's not just, oh, I got sick and that derails me. It's all of the fears and all of the things that go with our identification as a body.
Indeed.
So that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Did you want to get into anything else, or should I just sort of see what comes through here?
No, let's just dive right in, and just to let everybody know, you know, we'll know what we're going to say when we say it. That's it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. How do you feel
about it? Yeah, we just decided on.
Oh, go ahead.
I think what you read, you know, kind of outlines in a very powerful way what the core issue is around sickness. I mean, you can't be sick if you don't have a body. You know, the body is the fundamental requirement, prerequisite for sickness. Mm-hmm. So the moment we have a body, we think we're separate. We think we're different from everybody else. But you know, but obviously deep inside, that isn't true. You know, if there is one seminal learning, not just from A Course in Miracles, but at the heart of all spiritual systems, it is that you are not what you think you are. You remain as God created you, and you can call God God, you can call God Brahma, you can call God Allah. The name we assign to that infinite loving consciousness doesn't matter a bit. And in fact, you know, the entity of God isn't going to respond just based on your name. God responds when we tune into God. But the reality of who we are is beyond the body, beyond sickness, beyond the physical world. But meanwhile, back here in physical reality, where we think we are bodies, we are host or hostage to a whole variety of ills. You know, so I think where sickness comes in is it perhaps is the one place where, even though ego embraces sickness because it keeps us identified with the body and a sense of helplessness, it is also, therefore, the place where we see most most completely, most directly, that we really are prone to suffering and that there must be a better way, as Bill Thetford said to Helen Schuckman in the genesis of the scribing of A Course in Miracles. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, we can delude ourselves in a lot of other areas. You know, you can worry about starvation. You can worry about having enough warm clothes if you're here in the Northeast. You can worry about where you're going to meet a partner. But all of these, we can kind of go to a certain sense of hope. We can look at people who've made, you know, oodles of money and think, well, you know, when I make that kind of money, I'm going to be able to do all that stuff. The ego can create these idols that we believe in, and we can assign meaning to them and worship at their shrines without really having to look that hard at what we're doing. Whereas with sickness, okay, we've got hospitals and we've got doctors and we've got, you know, drugs and medicines and surgery. But deep down, we all know that, you know, that there's a core fear of, uh-oh, what if? You know, what if they can't control it? What if they can't deal with it? I remember when my father died several years ago, you know, they had a limited number of antibiotics to try on the pneumonia that he'd contracted while in the hospital. And when they went through that last one and did a full trial, it was kind of like, da-da-da-da, there's nothing else that we can do. And I think this fear is also behind the terror that this country, the United States, experienced a number of months ago around the Ebola virus.
Yes.
You know, here was a disease that people felt medicine was powerless to do anything about. In fact, that's not true. I mean, with good medical care, and if you catch it early and you hydrate with IV fluids, you're probably going to come through just fine. But that wasn't the perception. What Ebola demonstrated is that core terror around sickness that takes us really to the terror of death. And what is the terror of death? The terror of death is that fear that I, you know, the consciousness that I know of as me, will mm-hmm. cease to exist. And the fact of the matter is, that is accurate. You know, you, Shar, me, Bob, anyone listening, whatever your name might be, I got news for you. You're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not eternal. You're not going to go on forever. The you that is identified with your personality, with your life story, and with your body, those aren't going to survive. But there is another aspect of consciousness, real consciousness, consciousness capital C, the light within you, the love within you, that not only is eternal, I mean, I guess this sound is fairly obvious, it can't be killed. The ego mind can do everything that it wants. It can divert us and distract us. But not only can't it kill your true inner reality, it can't touch it. So that the God in us, that aspect of us that is the child of God, or as the Course would call it, the Son of God, you know, It's infinite. It's eternal. It's absolutely protected. Nothing of the physical universe can touch it any more than, you know, when you have a bad dream at night, that affects your waking reality in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So sickness exposes the stark terror of a mind that believes that it is alone and isolated and trapped in and identified with a physical body. And this is, you know, what I love about A Course in Miracles is it's such a complete metaphysical system. Every concept fits perfectly with every other once you really understand it. So sickness really comes another facet, another reflection, if you will, of the consequences of the separation from God. If I'm not separate from God, then all there is oneness, love, you know, eternally expanding, giving rise to creations and our creations' creations.
Mm-hmm.
Where in that picture could there possibly be sickness or suffering or pain? I mean, by definition, there can't be. But the moment a fragment of consciousness believes that it is no longer a part of that oneness and, you know, goes delusional, essentially, now it's hostage to all kinds of problems because it's lost its protection. It hasn't really. The protection is there. All that we ever have to do in any given moment is to wake up and go, oh, I am as God created me. You know, that one line, which actually is the only line that that is repeated in three different course lessons, that's how important it is. That's, you know, that's the wake up. You know, I am as God created me. But as long as we believe that we're separate, as long as we believe that we're bodies, as long as we believe that we're all different from each other, then in this world of separation, we're going to be scared of illness. And we're not going to just be scared of one. I mean, everybody's going to have their own thing. You know, I remember back in medical school, there were some illnesses that I was studying or treating in the hospital where I was kind of like, nah, you know, that's not going to bother me. I'm not going to ever get that. But then there were others where, and who knows why, this creepy sort of a fear. What if I get that? I mean, I remember reading about this whole strange category called restrictive lung diseases, and they usually strike in the 40s. And, of course, I was, you know, in my mid-20s, and I was thinking, ooh, what if I got one of those in my 40s? That would be pretty nasty. So, you know, just as separation spins off all of these different forms that we look at, disease also comes in all these different forms. But it's really just one and the same thing. It's the belief in the body and the belief that the body is more powerful than the mind. Did you want to say something? Or because ironically, this is what Christian Science was trying to say, Mary Baker Eddy. And, you know, I remember back in medical school and most people hear about Christian Science and it's like, you just pray to get better. You don't believe in any medications. How ridiculous is that? And indeed, if you're terrified of illness, but you're holding yourself back from what you think will help you, then all you're doing is making the fear worse. So if you believe in medicines, if you believe in surgery, for God's sakes, go get it. Don't make yourself
right.
more afraid. But what Christian Science was trying to say was mind is the causative creative agent. The body is an effect. The body is an effect of mind. The body is an effect of split mind, of fragmented mind. And
mm-hmm.
in that sense, you know, it just reflects what its own the circumstances of its own creation. The Course says ideas leave not their source. We never left God. We're an idea of God. We can't change that. But the body is our idea. So, you know, it's going to reflect how it got made, which is the separation from God. So when you see that, then in a sense, the solution for the one problem of separation that manifests through sickness, that solution becomes simply remembering who you are. Simply, Yeah, it's not simple. Well, it is simple, but we've just gotten so lost in the maze of physical reality here that it's hard for us to find our way back to it.
Right.
But I do want to, you know, make the point for anyone listening who is afflicted with you know, a chronic illness of any kind, or who's sitting there with the flu, I'm not saying, you know, shame on you. You should be enlightened, and you know, and you need now to wear the scarlet letter of your illness as proof that, you know, that you're just this sinful, you know, guilty human being, because we're all in that boat. We're all in that boat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where compassion comes in. But the Course does tell us that one mind waking up has the capacity to wake up all other minds. And I think that is, in fact, how enlightenment works. And all other minds do get woken up. It just looks like that takes time. In fact, in one of the sections that I was browsing through before we started here today, I think it was Lesson 136, Sickness is a Defense Against the Truth. It talked about time is also a defense against the truth.
Right.
Because time creates this bubble and says, no, things can't happen instantaneously. You can't have miracles. Things have to work themselves out in time. And therefore we get sick, where we get cancer, and we have to go get chemotherapy and surgery, and lo and behold, at the end of the day, we get better, hopefully, or we die. But it's going to take time. You have to go through the time. You know, I'm just as I say that, it occurs to me, isn't it interesting what's happened with cancer? I think it's a really nice example that mind really is the creative agent here.
Yep.
In that when I was in medical school, cancer was a death sentence. You know, you get cancer, even with good treatment, you know, maybe you're pushing it back by a few years. If you catch it real early and have surgery, you know, you get that mastectomy or the leg gets cut off, you can survive it. But the fear around the idea of cancer was just amazing. Now, there's still fear around it, but it is so much less.
Yeah.
Why? And as a result, it's being successfully treated. Now, we could say that our fear is less because it's being successfully treated, but given that mind is the creative agent, we can also say that because we now believe that it is less serious, we're more likely to respond as minds, and therefore our bodies are more likely to respond. But
mm-hmm.
the key lies in the mind. You know, the key lies in the mind. So what else about sickness? Do you have any thoughts? Let me turn it over to you, and I'll go offline and see what I can download, you know, going forward.
Okay, you go right ahead. I wanted to mention how the mind gets split. In the Course, in numerous places, it talks about a consciousness split, which is trying to believe in two things at once, and belief is total. You can't believe in two things at once. You can believe in the glory of God, but you can't not believe in the power that you yourself hold, because we were created in His image. So there's something I wanted to touch on with regard to the power that we were given by God, and that is in Chapter 10, The Idols of Sickness, in the introduction. And it states, "Nothing beyond yourself can make you fearful or loving, because nothing is beyond you. Time and eternity are both in your mind and will conflict until you perceive time solely as a means to regain eternity." So there is one of the core uses for time for us to realize eternity. You cannot do this as long as you believe that anything happening to you is caused by factors outside yourself. Now, we've discussed this from various angles over the year or so, but with regard to sickness, I love the way it's stated so succinctly here. It states in paragraph 3, "He created you for Himself, but He gave you the power to create for yourself so you would be like Him. That is why your mind is holy. Can anything exceed the love of God? Can anything, then, exceed your will? Nothing can reach you from beyond it, because being in God, you encompass everything. Believe this, and you will realize how much is up to you." So that just demonstrates right there how we were given free will, and choice is powerful. Thought is powerful. Belief is powerful. So when we do have those fears, whether it's of cancer or something smaller, like the flu, or falling. We have these fears, and we all have seen instances where we tend, what we are afraid of, we tend to create it. The Course calls these miscreations, but they're, because there are no mistakes, we can make a mistake, trip and fall, break a bone. We call that a mistake, but the Course would call that a miscreation based upon a misperception. Having an irrational fear of falling down instead of trusting in your center of gravity, given that you're walking on solid ground. But that fear snowballs, and then what you wind up witnessing outside of yourself is a miscreation based on that thought, and you wind up activating that universal link that where the mirror pops up to show you what you're afraid of. So I wanted to emphasize that so that people can get the idea that when you believe wholeheartedly in the power of God and in the power of thought and that in the power of healing, then fear then can't be real and sickness can't be real, not in the sense of true Course text where everything is an illusion, then illness then is a reflection along with everything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I also wanted to... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, you had mentioned dreams in what you were stating, and in Chapter 10, it goes on to talk about dreams, and one or two of the statements that I love the most when they talk about dreams, because, you know, I do the dream interpretation, and it equates life as a dream. And in Chapter 10, Section 1, At Home in God, Paragraph 2, it says, you recognize from your own experience that what you see in dreams you think is real while you are asleep. So in other words, when we're dreaming and maybe something fearful is happening, like we're being chased or we can't find our home, or we're driving in a car that's going too fast and we feel afraid, we become emotionally involved in the activity that we're witnessing and we think it's real, only to wake up and discover, oh, it was a dream. It doesn't have a connection to reality. But it goes on to state, yet the instant you waken, you realize that everything that seemed to happen in a dream did not happen at all. You do not think this strange, even though all the laws of what you awakened to were violated while you slept. Is it not possible that you merely shifted from one dream to another without really waking? So there it gets into the waking dream. I know, isn't that... It gives me chills. It's so profound. But I wanted to take those two concepts and kind of blend them together to offer the audience an easier transition from one way of thinking to the thinking that, okay, well, if this is all an illusion, then anything is possible, and I have the power to change it.
Yeah.
I think that's the core of my message.
That is spot on. You always have the power to change it. The mistake that I think many of us wander into is kind of this sense that, okay, mind is a creative force, and my mind can manifest whatever it is that I want or need, but it restricts mind to the personal level. So I'm sitting here going, Dr. Bob Rosenthal is going to do this powerful visualization, and I'm going to see myself healthy, and I'm going to see myself, you know, walking into the little checkout store and buying my lottery ticket, and I'm going to visualize that lottery ticket doing, you know, winning me $100 million, blah, 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 blah. Mind is creative when you identify with what mind really is. When you wake up to the God mind in you, and, you know, as the Course says in, I think it's Lesson 155, I will step back and let God lead the way, let him lead the way. Mm-hmm. Then there's a whole, you know, it's almost like you suddenly plug yourself in to this entire GPS system that will guide you perfectly, unless you turn it off. It makes sure you're in the right place at the right time. It makes sure that you are fulfilling your special teaching function with exactly those people, i.e. those other minds who you are best able to reach, you uniquely. So when we go to that level of mind, suddenly, we're tuned in. It's mm-hmm. all there. When we block it off, then we're in trouble. The metaphor that comes to mind is it's kind of like we're lamps, and we all have, we all radiate light. But mm-hmm. as lamps, we want to think, I don't like the idea that I'm dependent on this cord. I think I'm going to yank this cord out. I want to do this on my own. I want to go somewhere else. I don't want to shine a light in this corner of the room. I want to shine a light outside somewhere. And the moment we pull that cord, we cut ourselves off from our source, granted, it's a rough metaphor, but we need electricity, we need energy, we need source in order to shine, in order to radiate that. So, if you're tuned in, if you're plugged in, if you accept yourself as God created you, even in the dream, then you'll be in the right place at the right time. All of those miracles happen. And I'll tell you what, the further along the path you are, you really don't even notice them. Or they come up in these very seemingly small ways that actually are quite powerful and profound to just sort of say, hey, you're in flow. Life is working for you. But when you yank yourself out of that, when you pull your own cord out of the wall and try to be a self-created being, you're going to run into trouble. And I think this is where sickness comes in. The body can't sustain itself. You cannot find abiding happiness from the perspective of being a limited physical being in a body. First, there's the fact of death. Second, there's the fact of aging. Third, there's the fact of illness. This is what the Buddha's great insight in his first noble truth was. All life is dukkha, suffering, dissatisfaction. When you come at life from the perspective of a being separated from its creator, you are bound to have suffering. In my book, From Plagues to Miracles, this is perhaps one of the key points, is Pharaoh, the ego mind, has to run into plagues. And here we are talking about sickness, so we're talking about literal plagues.
Right.
If you identify with the weakness in you, what you're going to get is proof that weakness is weak. And so we run into these obstacles, we run into things that don't work, and we get so upset that they don't work. In point of fact, it's very important that they don't work. In one of the sections in Chapter 10, A Course in Miracles makes the point that, if it all worked for you, and if physical reality were just, a pig in a poke dream, we'd never want to wake up, and that would be a real problem. We would cut ourselves off from God eternally. Of course, that whole theoretical construction is impossible, because happiness is impossible without that connection to spirit. We can't dissociate it. But plagues, when they come up, are, it's a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
It's like here you are in the dream and you're lying next to your spouse and they hear you going, and they know that you're having a nightmare, and they gently reach over and shake you and whisper, and you wake up. In a way, and maybe in the dream, something happens and you're like, oh, yeah, I got to come out of this. But when we run into plagues, illness, sickness, it's simply a very powerful reminder that you need to disidentify with your body. So really, we should all be grateful for our sickness. Ha, 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 ha. Not grateful that we're suffering, but grateful that it's not possible to wander away from God. We can't pull our own plug out of the wall. We can't be self-created beings, which is what the ego wants.
Right.
The essence of the idea of evil is in my understanding and thinking about it, is the separation, is the idea that I exist separate and distinct from anyone else or everyone else. Because, you know, if I'm not related to anyone else, if we're not made of the same God stuff, then why shouldn't I kill people? And why shouldn't I get what I want and take? And, you know, we're all going to, I'm going to die at the end of the day. I mean, the philosophy of separation is a terrible, chilling philosophy that does not give rise to very much good stuff. But so why don't more of us follow that if we really believe that we're separate bodies? Well, more of us don't follow it because I think, you know, within ourselves, we know what love feels like, and we'd always rather choose love over fear.
Sure.
You know, we know what peace feels like, and we'd always rather choose that over the insecurity of hurting someone and then being terrified of the retribution that's going to come back. And this is what we did with God, of course. We separated from God, and then we were terrified that God was going to come stalking us and find us where we're hiding out here in physical reality and, you know, and grab us like some, you know, all-powerful, raging, abusive father and, you know, haul our asses back to heaven. Well, you know, no, it doesn't work that way. Heaven never stopped. You never left heaven. You just went to sleep and dreamed that you left heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And in that dream, there was sickness and suffering and poverty and cold and all the other, you know, good stuff. I was talking about Exodus and the plagues.
Mm-hmm.
Plagues only strike the ego. You know, it's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
go ahead. Let me turn it over to you.
I just want to.
I'm sure I've triggered some thoughts.
Yeah, you did. I just want to add a predicate to the subject you just brought up, which is, you know, we're born on this planet, and basically, as it says in section 2 of chapter 10, we forgot our true nature, and so the whole journey here is trying to remember what we already know, the truth about ourselves, but we really forgot that we are children of God. And I think, yes, everybody would certainly choose love over fear, but I also notice in the world today that most people are making a concerted effort to be more loving, to get that group energy going, to care for each other. Look at all the I'll talk positive and negative. Look at all the rallies around, like things like cancer and all of the efforts that people are making for research and finding a cure. And look at all of the protests going against things that have been witnessed that people disagree with. And there have been some violence, some peaceful. However, there's that collective consciousness happening, and that makes me happy. You know what I mean? But I wanted to mention,
when we align... Yeah, when we align with someone else in the interest of something greater, we are moving back towards source, back towards our true nature.
Mm-hmm. When two or more are gathered in his name, and that's what we need. But just to emphasize the concept that sickness is, I call it like a folding in on the self, where the mind kind of splits, kind of feels fractured, and then the body reflects it in whatever part of you is the most vulnerable, be it your sinuses, your lungs, your organs, your abdomen, your skin. You know, I was a psoriasis sufferer. I am absolutely completely clear because I realized that I chose psoriasis as a means to keep myself isolated and keep people at a distance. So I worked on that for a long time. And I'm absolutely clear of it. And there are other things I've managed to let go of and no longer see the reflection of those thoughts and beliefs in my body, such as sinus infections. Haven't had one since 1996, February of 1996, because, and as I reread the chapter today, it sprung to mind again, because that is when I really started to value myself and who I really was. Once I saw that value, then the need for sickness was less and less, and I didn't need it to kind of tie me to my couch so I could sit there and examine my thoughts and wallow in self-pity, and why am I sick? Why is this happening to me? Why is my body attacking me? And so just to emphasize the notion that all attack is self-attack, as it states in Section 2, the decision to forget, where Jesus goes into this is what we've decided to do. We let go of that identification with God the Father, and thereby anything that happens to us we perceive as an outside attack. But all attack is self-attack. It says it cannot be anything else arising from your own decision not to be what you are. It is an attack on your identification. So I wanted to talk about, this chapter is called The Idols of Sickness, so I wanted to talk about how sickness then is, in fact, idolatry, as we state in the title for the segment.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, I mean, the Course talks about idols and idolatry in a number of places, and, you know, the common conception of an idol is you're worshiping a false god. You know, if you really go deep into that idea, the false god isn't just Baal or Zeus or, you know, some limited concept that we've, you know, called a god. An idol is anything that you value more than you value God, anything that you value more than you value your true self. But so do we really value sickness? How can the Course call it an idol? Well, when you're sick, how preoccupied are you with that? How much do your thoughts turn to either self-pity or hurt or I got to find a doctor? We don't necessarily take our illness and do what I think is the perhaps most healing thing to do, retreat, go inward, look at, okay, you know, where have I fallen victim again to the an idol, some kind of a
Bob, can you restate that? Did you hit your mute button, Bob?
No, I did not.
You just went out.
Can you hear me?
You kind of, I can hear you now. Can you restate the last three or four sentences? Last three sentences or so?
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. No, I'm not sure what happened there.
No worries.
But, now I have to retract my sentences, though. That's not easy. You know, we live in the holy instant, and when it's gone, it's gone.
Oh, I know.
What did I was saying.
Yeah, you were saying how we fall into self-pity and...
Yeah, I was talking about idols and sort of this idea that anything that we value more than God is an idol, and that when we are sick, we cut ourselves off, and that, you know, from that which is higher. We think our body is doing it to us, but really, you know, it can't be. The body is neutral. The body follows our directions. It's the mind doing it. And therefore, when we worship at the idol of sickness, which really means worship the idol of sickness, worship at the altar of sickness, all that really means is that we've made that our reality in the moment. And what I was saying when I cut out was a very good technique to use. What I try to do when I'm sick and what you were describing with the psoriasis and with the sinus infections is rather than being afraid of the illness, rather than running to cure it and try to eliminate it, which the psychotherapy manual talks about as, okay, you can get rid of one manifestation of illness, but it's going to pop up somewhere else. In psychiatry, we call this symptom substitution. You know, okay, you got rid of this, but now something else is going to show up that manifests it. If we pull back and just kind of ask ourselves, what does this mean to me, this illness? What is it doing? What is it keeping me from doing? And what does that mean?
Its purpose.
Yeah, what exactly? What?
Yeah.
But its purpose at the deepest level, even... You know, how does this define me as who I am? There was a woman that was in one of our Course in Miracles groups who said, you know, she had cancer in five different places and realized each one of those spots of cancer represented one of her five siblings and worked it through, and boom, the cancer, you know, was gone. So when we do that and deal with the illness at the level of cause, not effect, then it will go away. Now, that might take time. I think it's in the psychotherapy manual, it talks about how, you know, even though healing is instantaneous, that might be too scary and too disruptive of any particular individual's thought system to be like, wow, I had stage 4 cancer, now I'm completely free. That might be too scary. And if it's scary, the Holy Spirit will never do anything that increases fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's too scary, it's still going to happen. It's just going to happen more slowly. And that's great. You'll still get to the end point. But
mm-hmm.
so when we're sick, rather than feeling like we're trapped by it and that our body has kind of turned on us and, you know, ambushed us, it's more, I mean, the analogy I love is it's like those bumps at the side of the road that tell you you're going off the road. Suddenly your car's
mm-hmm.
going, thump, 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 and say, whoa, do I have a flat tire? Oh, no, I'm hitting the bumps. I'm going off the road. Let me just steer back onto the road. That's what sickness is, and that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to talk a little bit about dissociation, which is in Chapter 10.
Yeah.
But if you have something... Yeah.
Just to underscore, you were saying how it says that sickness is idolatry because it is the belief that power can be taken from you. So that belief in powerlessness, when I imagine it hits a peak in whatever area of your life you're feeling powerless, where, for instance, many people have immense stress at work, and that affects your identity, and you feel powerless. So you may be prone to get sick a lot to get yourself out of work. Sometimes you might have a family dynamic that you're crying to get away from, and something happens like migraines where it pulls you out and puts you into isolation. So just a couple ways to illustrate that these can be reflections, but that belief that the power can be taken from us, and then we have to go to somebody that we look up to, like a doctor, and say, what's wrong with me? I don't know what this is. Well, here, do this. And then follow the direction of that person or persons, depending on the severity of the illness. Then that's where we trip up the most. I just wanted to kind of demonstrate the reflective stuff again.
Okay. A Course in Miracles talks a lot about magic, too, and in the context of healing. That, you know, when we take little capsules that we think are going to make us better, that's magic. And what it means by magic is essentially that our belief that it will help us is what does it, but it's not, it's still a diversion and a blinding, an intentional turning away, looking away from the truth of who we are. So it's not, oh, my oneness doesn't allow any entry for illness. There can be no illness within the oneness of God, love, light, you know, the child of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, okay, I'm within a world of form. I am a form, a body that has its own unique, you know, shape and thoughts. And I have to find a particular, you know, cure, a solution within the world of form. Maybe, you know, that's an antibiotic. You know, if you're more holistically minded, maybe that's a particular herbal plant that you, you know, found somewhere. Maybe that's, you know, a mantra that your guru gave you. But it's the idea that we're looking within a world of form for some solution to a seeming problem that we have disconnected from the only real problem there is, which is our separation from God. Now, think of it this way. If we are all one with God and all one with each other, then what are we? We obviously can't be bodies, and we're not. We're mind, and what is the nature of that mind? It's light, it's love, it's this sense of unity and oneness. So in the midst of being sick, even with your body aching and hurting, can you, with some little sliver of your mind, turn to that light, that oneness, that love? Just remind yourself, you know, love created me like itself. You know, God and I are one. The light within me cannot be put out. Any affirmation that goes to the truth of who you are. Because if we are just these, you know, sort of holographic ripples in a field of light energy, and that light is getting distorted in such a way that it thinks it's sick, well, that's not that hard to correct. We're just sort of, you know, tuning the picture on the TV, for those of us who are old enough to have had TVs that needed that kind of tuning. you know, you are light, if you are love, the solution to any distortion is very easy. Just go back to that original source. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here are two different avenues for arriving at the same place. One starts within the world of form. Okay, I'm having a symptom. What does this mean for me? What's its purpose? Let me sort of walk it backwards and reverse engineer it till I get to that aspect of mind, that thought that gave rise to that. And when I find that thought, instead of having that thought, I can choose to do so, you know, I can choose a different way. I can choose once again. I can choose a more loving thought. I can choose to appreciate myself or someone else, which brings us back into alignment with the one. Or we can cut to the chase and go directly to the one, which ironically will often bring to mind that distortion where you had a particular thought. Or, you know, I've often run into people who had the experience I did in medical school, where I was, you know, sniffling and taking an elevator, and a nurse who I knew was in there said, "You are going to be really sick tonight." And I thought about it, and I said, "No, I'm not." And she said, "Oh, yeah, you are." And I said, "No, I'm not." And we went back and forth that way about three or four times.
Right.
And, you know, we can get to that place of, no, I do not choose sickness.
I don't have confidence.
It's not my nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what I am using time for, because the purpose of time is to wake up and end time for everybody. You know,
right.
The purpose of time is to find eternity, the holy instant. And if that's my goal, if that's my commitment, then yeah, sickness doesn't have a place in that. Does greed, nor does scarcity, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So were you successful in pushing that cold away that night?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. I'll give you a more I've got a much more significant one. I mean, you know how this works with the psoriasis, but, you know, about, I don't know, a dozen years ago, I had a cardiac arrhythmia, you know, one of those things where your heart is just sort of dancing a jig in a really strange way.
Okay.
And I went to the emergency room, and of course, by the time I got there, it stopped. I'm one of those people where whatever symptom I have, if I make a doctor's appointment, it's guaranteed not to be there when I see the doctor, so that he or she thinks I'm a total fool and a hypochondriac.
Yeah.
I had to get,
too.
You know, because I'm a doc. You too?
Well, we
must be from that same greater family.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because I'm a doctor, they were like, well, let's do the highfalutin, high-tech test.
Yeah.
So I had a thallium stress test where you work out on a treadmill and then they, you know, inject some a radioisotope of thallium, and they can see exactly any blocks at all in your heart that might show up with exercise. So I do I'm doing the test, and the guy's looking at my EKG, and he's sort of smiling and shaking his head. He's like, "You're fine, looks good. And then I went and had the thallium part of the test where they do this scan. And then I get home, and it's like, yeah, I think everything's fine. But an hour and a half later, the phone rings, and the cardiologist says, actually, the test was abnormal. It had some filling defects, and that's pretty serious. And you know, you need a cardiac cath. And so being a doctor, I scheduled the cardiac cath. But I really, I literally saw I had a choice of two paths.
Mm-hmm.
And along down one path, I had a serious heart problem at age 47 that I would have to contend with. Down the other path was simply a choice that's not me. And I was actually working the Abraham Hicks material. Abraham is a channel that's all about manifestation, and I think it's
good
a
stuff.
Very good prequel to what I see as the deeper and more accurate depiction of truth in A Course in Miracles. But I actually went to an Abraham workshop, and they answered my question about should I have this cardiac cath or not. And it was kind of like, you know, well, whatever belief system you're in, you need to honor that. And as
mm-hmm.
a doctor, I clearly had been, you know, inculcated in the belief system of medicine. But I went in really recognizing I need to do this for myself, but I really do have a choice. They did the cardiac cath, and the guy said, it's normal. And he said, very, very rare to have a false positive like that, but you probably had a little virus that caused the arrhythmia, created a little scar tissue that made the scan not pick up what the tissue beneath it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there was a medical reason for it. But in my heart of hearts, I knew I had simply chosen a better path and chosen not to go that route. That's the power of choice when we're not afraid, or rather when we can suspend fear and go to that higher level of what is my life? You know, where am I headed? What is my purpose? What do I dedicate myself to? You know, am I a frightened being dedicated to scraping out a little bit of survival on the planet Earth and leaving a little bit of a legacy to my kids? Or am I, you know, the holy child of God, God itself, here to bring light, love, and oneness into the world and to awaken all of my brothers and sisters along with me?
Mm-hmm.
There's our choice.
That's all
on
about
one way lies sickness and death. The other way,
exactly.
You know, yet.
It says on in section, where am I? Section 5, the denial of God. And it talks about depression, and it had previous to that, it spoke about the magic that you spoke of. And in paragraph, it's a pretty decent-sized section. Paragraph 14, time itself is your choice. If you would remember eternity, you must look only on the eternal. If you allow yourself to become preoccupied with the temporal, you are living in time. So this then is another way to fortify your belief that we are spirits having a human experience. And if you can shift your perception to that more and more, make it habitual, make it just change your mind. Make it so that, no, I am of God, I am spirit, and thereby rise above the illusion so that you're in the world but not of it, then sickness should not become as much of a problem as it is to many others. But as it pertains to others who are sick, so this I want to go out to those who may have a loved one suffering from cancer or some other debilitating illness, where it says that, let me find it, do not side with sickness in the presence of a son of God, even if he believes in it, for your acceptance of God in him acknowledges the love of God he has forgotten. And I think that's an important point. Would you like to add something on that?
I'm reminded of one of the prayers in one of the lessons that I'm not pulling up completely, but I think I will find it, where instead of looking at, you know, the sick body that is there to honor, you know, here it is. It was in lesson 127, you know, there is no love but God.
Right.
It ends with this prayer. I bless you, brother, with the love of God, which I would share with you. For I would learn the joyous lesson that there is no love but God's and yours and mine and everyone's. Now, there is a total affirmation of your reality, his or her reality, God's reality, everyone's reality. So even though, you know, you might be sitting by the sick bed, you might be bringing chicken soup, you know, this doesn't mean, you know, not validating a brother's sickness doesn't mean telling them they're wrong. You know, in another section of the course, it says you never tell a brother that he's wrong. You know, any misperception and anything that is not love should be met with love. You know, after all, that's the only reality. But what this is saying is that you can sit there in the presence of someone who thinks they're sick without believing it yourself and recognizing the highest in them, recognizing that in them that is the same in you, blessing them with the love of God, which is also the love that's in you and in them. This is how I do my psychotherapy. You know, pretty much before every session, I just remind myself of who I am and who I'm working with, and let it unfold from there. You know, we're all one.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It says health in this world is the counterpart of value in heaven. So when we value ourselves and that spark of us that is God, then I think that is the best antidote to any kind of sickness, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical. Would you agree?
Yeah. Sickness is just, you know, it's another call to wake up. Any place here where you find yourself suffering, it's another call to choose once again. You know, early in the text, a line that I'm very fond of. You know, tolerance for pain may be high, but it is not, it's not without ending. Eventually, everyone, recognizes that there must be a better way. We go through physical reality believing that the solution to the problem of fear and separation lies within physical reality. You know, it's going to be finding that perfect partner. It's going to be making that $10 million. It's going to be, you know, working out and running the marathon so that you'll never be susceptible to illness. It's going to be becoming a Hollywood star so everyone loves you and adores you. We try to, you know, solve the problem of the ego's essential frailty and aloneness through the form that the ego sets up.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You can't solve the problem at the level that created it and gave rise to it. You have to go to the higher level. And when we go to the higher level, it's gone. It never even existed. You know, you're no longer seeing it. And so, yes, when we recognize that, you know, when it says that health on Earth is equivalent to is the value, you know, it's like, I forget what the quote you said was, but you know, is our value on Earth?
Health in this world is the counterpart of value in heaven.
Thank you. Health in this world is the counterpart of value in heaven. In other words, we are valued in heaven. Heaven being our natural state as part of God's infinite, unending creation. Value is part and parcel of that. You can't not be valuable in that. So when we translate that to, you know, physical reality, if we're carrying that with us, then we won't be sick. And here's the thing. Even if your body isn't functioning right, you still, the essential you, won't be touched by it in the same way. There's a great story about the Hindu sage Ramana Maharshi that, you know, when he was dying of lung cancer, his disciples heard him groan. The guru is in pain, and they said, you know,
wait.
Oh, you know.
Bob, back up
just
a minute. You cut out when it said the disciples heard him groan, I think is what you said.
Oh, that is frustrating. I'm not sure why that's happening.
I had some problems the other day with Blog Talk Radio, so I think they might be doing maintenance to the site. I apologize, but
okay.
Yes, and the disciples heard him groan.
Yeah, so Ramana Maharshi was dying of lung cancer. His disciples heard him groan, and, you know, they went up and, you know, oh, you know, you're suffering, you're in pain. And he kind of looked at them and said, you know, who's suffering? Who's in pain? And his favorite question for waking people up was, you know, who am I? You know, who are you really? If you ask the question, who am I, and strip away all of the false bullshit and all of the idols and all of the, you know, you get down to your God self. That's the only you. So what he was saying is, oh, my body might be groaning. My body's dying of lung cancer, but I, the essence of I, the brilliant diamond of love light within, I'm just fine. You know, this was the path that he and happened to choose to exit physical reality, which doesn't mean that his presence isn't still felt here and, benefiting, you know, thousands and thousands of people. We in the West still have that unfortunate tendency. It's almost like a Calvinistic tendency of looking at the body and going, oh, you're in good health. You must be a very, you know, special, holy, wonderful human being. You're sick. You're doing something wrong. You know, I'm better than you because I'm healthy. No, not necessarily. Someone struggling with cancer or with some debilitating illness might be, you know, really far along on their path. And in fact, that might be part of what they're contending with is, here's my body, and it really isn't part of me. And it's not, you know, responding instantly to my being tuned into my God self. But so what? I'm not my body. You know, I am something way beyond the body. I am something bigger than the body. I am something that transcends the body completely. Because after all, we are all, you know, going to pass away someday. I want to look for another one of my favorite quotes, which talks about what death can be, because I think that when we think about sickness, you know, we often go to these horrible images of how we're going to die, you know, emaciated, you know, with tubes all stuck in us and, you know, on a cancer ward, or, you know, falling down, clutching your arm in the middle of the street as,
right,
as death swoops down on you. But, and this was triggered by thinking about Ramana Maharshi dying, and that, you know, even though he, you know, had lung cancer, from the perspective of his big self, his true self, that was just part of the illusion. So from the Song of Prayer, Forgiveness, and Healing, the section on healing, I just want to read this quote. It's page 17 if you have the Foundation for Inner Peace version of the Course. You know, this is what death should be, a quiet choice made joyfully and with a sense of peace, because the body has been kindly used to help the Son of God along the way he goes to God. We thank the body, then, for all the service it has given us, but we are thankful, too, the need is done to walk the world of limits and to reach the Christ in hidden forms and clearly seen at most in lovely flashes. Now we can behold him without blinders in the light that we have learned to look upon again. We call it death, but it is liberty. It does not come in forms. It does not come in forms that seem to be thrust down in pain upon unwilling flesh, but as a gentle welcome to release. If there has been true healing, that is, healing of the mind, this can be the form in which death comes when it is time to rest a while from labor gladly done and gladly ended. Now we go in peace to freer air and gentler climate, where it is not hard to see the gifts we gave were saved for us. For Christ is clearer now, his vision more sustained in us, his voice, the word of God, more certainly our own. So I think this is, you know, death look like, and by extension, what does illness look like? Ramana Maharshi's lung cancer. When we really have forgiven the world, forgiven ourselves, when we really are looking through the eyes of what the Course calls the Christ consciousness, the one-mindedness, of creation. And I think that is the picture of it. You know, there's no violence in it. There's no fighting. There's no agony. It's kind of like, you know, I did my part. I fulfilled my special function, and I'm done. Another great line that comes to me from a Zen master, Layman Pang, was, you know, talking about the enlightenment. He says at the end, you know, you are neither holy nor wise. You're just an ordinary fellow who's completed his work. But think about that. Yeah, you're an ordinary fellow. We're all the same. You're an ordinary fellow who's completed his work. That's our goal, you know.
No better, no worse. No higher, no lower.
Right.
We're all the same.
Right.
Good stuff.
Of course, I would say we are holy and wise if we're ordinary fellows who've completed our work, but you know, there's the paradox.
Yes, there it is. Very interesting. Well, we're running out of time, but I want
yes,
to
Yes, and
say,
I'm complete.
Yeah, I feel
so
good.
So did you have a quote or a prayer that you wanted to close with?
I have a quote, a prayer rather, from Choose Once Again, the lovely book that you got me. I just wanted to comment very quickly. Excellent article in the Holy Encounter
for January, February. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yes, I wrote an article on a concept called Tikkun Olam, which is a Jewish idea about how God sort of fractured into all of the beings that we are and the process of healing that fracture, because it's so close to the theology of A Course in Miracles. And then offered a metaphor for that. If you don't get the Holy Encounter, it is available both in digital form or mail form for free from the Miracle Distribution Center. So if you go to the Miracle Distribution Center website and look up Holy Encounter, you can access that. I find it one of the more helpful publications that's out there. But yes, I have an article in that, and you feel free to check it out. Thank you for remembering that, Char.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it. And they have new services that they add all the time. If you're not familiar with the Miracle Distribution Center, it was founded in the 70s. So they've been at this a very long time. Very knowledgeable people, very wonderful authors, some who have left us. But go to the website at miraclecenter.org. You can also start receiving daily lessons. That is helpful to many people. The 2015 wall calendar is now available. Of course, there's many other wonderful articles and activities. The 2015 conference is set up. So good stuff. I wanted to bring that up. Also, visit Dr. Bob at his website, FromPlaguesToMiracles.com. Learn more about his extraordinary book, From Plagues to Miracles, and you can purchase that there. You can also read excerpts. You can find Dr. Bob on Facebook at From Plagues to Miracles. You can also get in touch with me, if you like, at Spiritual Insights Radio. And if you would like to visit or revisit some of our previous segments, we've got quite a few now. Just visit spiritualinsightsradio.com. All of these segments are archived by category. So, Dr. Bob, you and I have our own little Course in Miracles section.
Oh, great.
And
I also have them all archived on my website, or at least not all, but up to, you know, the latest ones. So you can often find them there, too. But Char is the source on this.
Yes. No, that list will be complete very soon. Okay. So that's it for me. I do hope you have
a
wonderful month.
Thank you for hosting.
You're welcome. And I will end with the prayer, and I will talk to you in our next segment.
I'll look forward to it.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Bob. All right, this is from Choose Once Again, Selections from A Course in Miracles, published by the Foundation for Inner Peace. Page 89. I am God's Son. Today I lay aside all sick illusions of myself and let my Father tell me who I really am. I am God's Son, complete and healed and whole, shining in the reflection of His love. In me is His creation sanctified and guaranteed eternal life. In me is love perfected, fear impossible, and joy established without opposite. I am the holy home of God Himself. I am the heaven where His love resides. I am His holy sinlessness itself. I am His holy sinlessness itself, for in my purity abides His own. Amen.
Amen.
Until next time, everyone, God bless. And be at peace.